Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
Welcome back to Going In Raw Matt Chat, the show that's fueled by $20 and up patrons. That's right, at patreon.com/Steve and Larson. You too can have your video question, or in some cases, just us reading your question right here on Matt Chat. Debate topics that we will then debate.
Yeah, that's usually what you do with debate topics, is debate them.
Usually you debate them. You discuss them, share your point of view, make your argument. So that's what we do right here.
Something like that.
That's right. But the $20 Patreon tier is not the only Patreon tier. Also, for $5 a month, you can watch all of our live streams, live stream podcasts, and all sorts of great stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know what's great is that we're going to be going to the office. We're like in a couple of weeks from now, we're going to be in the office broadcasting this, right?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm proposing is on Thursdays when we record Matt Chat, before we do Matt Chat.
Today's Wednesday.
On Wednesdays, before we record Matt Chat, we go get loaded.
Oh, at the brew pub down the street? All right. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Sounds good. Anyways, we got a bunch of great questions today from our patrons, so we're going to get right into it. From Steel Forge Luke Mahoney. Tell me that's not an ECW name.
That's a great name.
Steel Forge Luke Mahoney.
Oh, my God.
Let's see what he has.
Hi, Steven Larson. Luke Mahoney here. First-time question asker for Matt Chat. So this week on Going In Raw for Monday, you mentioned that if Lesnar were gone, there'd be a big void at the top of the card. And I've got a really simple question for debate. I don't really like Lesnar that much, just my opinion. So I just wanted to debate from you guys. Steve, I'd like to hear just what is really great about Brock Lesnar, all the really awesome stuff about him. And Larson, I want you to tell me everything that sucks about Lesnar, because there's nothing that makes me happier than Salty Larson. Too sweet. Firm handshake. Thanks, friendos.
Thank you, Steel Forge Luke Mahoney.
Thank you, Steel Forge. Yeah, of course, Lesnar. Lesnar's great. Lesnar's awesome. Come on, man. Nobody's bigger than Brock Lesnar right now. He's a ratings magnet. He's a live attendance magnet. He's the guy that's going to make the next guy. So, of course, Brock Lesnar is what's best for business. I do wish the Universal title, I hope that finally leaves his belly so that he can go on and maybe do some more, I'm not going to say interesting things, because Brock Lesnar doesn't really do interesting things. However, seeing him match up against some other names might be interesting. I personally would love to see Brock Lesnar get into a feud with Shinsuke Nakamura. They had a match in New Japan back in like 2006, 2008, something like that.
2006.
Yeah. And so I'd love to see what Shinsuke Nakamura could do with Brock Lesnar. I do think he's the next guy who probably could benefit the most from beating Brock Lesnar. I think it'd be a lot of fun. But yeah, Brock Lesnar, he's great. I hope he re-signs with WWE to his part-time deal. Just keep him out of the title scene, because I don't think it's necessary. I think that title, the Universal title, could be better served on other wrestlers. But yeah, man, look, anything that brings up ratings that could potentially raise the TV fee rate that the WWE can then charge their next suitor, be it USA or somebody else, is a good thing, and he brings in ratings. Why would you ever argue against somebody who's best for business? Go ahead.
Brock Lesnar is bored. He doesn't care what he does in that ring, for the most part. He likes collecting his fat paycheck,
yeah, man,
going home, and looking at his land.
Can you blame the guy?
No, but that doesn't necessarily make for captivating wrestling television, which is what I really care about. And kind of the bummer of it all is that there was a point in time when Brock Lesnar, during his first WWE run, was actually a really good wrestler. Now all he does is suplex people. That's it. It gets old real fast. It was fun when he destroyed John Cena with 16 suplexes at SummerSlam, whatever it was, a few years back, because it was shocking. We've never seen John Cena manhandled like that before. Now when he does it, it's predictable. It's boring. I don't care about it. There's nothing I find terribly entertaining about Brock Lesnar at all these days, except how early in the match he turns purple.
That is a very good selling point. One of the matches of the year from 2017 was the four-way at SummerSlam.
Because of Braun!
Well, yeah, but how he reacts to Braun. You see Braun knee Brock in the head, and then Brock almost...
Yeah, that's unprofessional, Brock. I don't want that in my ring. I understand receipts are given the wrestling ring when someone is a little stiff. Same time, though, you don't cold cock someone in the jaw when they're not looking at, not expecting it. That's unprofessional.
I don't know why.
This isn't the octagon.
I don't know why I was thinking about this the other day. When's the last time you saw Brock Lesnar run ropes?
Never. He doesn't run the ropes.
He never runs. He doesn't run.
He'll run to the corner to knee somebody or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's how Goldberg beat him. I've seen him,
run the ropes.
Oh, that's the opposite. Sorry, that's how Brock beat Goldberg.
Yeah.
Anyways, Lesnar, I find him boring.
And Goldberg versus Brock was great last year. That was so much fun. It was so much
fun. Can I finish my point, please?
I thought you were done.
No, I'm not done. Lesnar is boring. I can tell he's bored. Even Heyman these days, 75% of the time, kind of phones in his promos because he kind of has to do the same thing time in and time out.
Yeah.
If you look at the match at SummerSlam, yeah, it was great because Brock was there, but you also had Braun and Samoa Joe. They're great. But let me finish.
Brock is always the mountain you got to climb.
So, but that's booking. That's not him as a competitor. He's a boring wrestler to watch. Well, let me finish.
Okay.
So you had the SummerSlam match. Great. His match against AJ was great. That's because AJ brings everybody to great matches. But look at his match against Braun at No Mercy. Underwhelming because they didn't do anything.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything.
They didn't do anything.
His match against Samoa Joe was fun because Samoa Joe was wrecking him. And then F5 out of nowhere and match over. Underwhelming. Go back to Brock's match against Dean Ambrose, WrestleMania a couple years back. For whatever reason, Brock either didn't respect Dean, didn't appreciate his talents.
He probably took one look at him and was like, dude, you weigh $150. What am I going to do with you?
See, that's not Dean Ambrose's fault. That's creator's fault. It wasn't like Dean Ambrose went and, maybe he did, I don't know, went and lobbied for a match against Brock Lesnar, and that was the match creative gave him. Nonetheless, he should give it his all. That was the most obvious phone-in I've ever seen.
Yeah. No, for me, it was the Randy Orton one. That was a huge phone.
Oh, that too. That was awful.
That was a terrible phone.
And he concussed Randy Orton. Shoot. He busted him open, created some controversy backstage. Chris Jericho,
oh, I love Jericho,
went to Gorilla to confront Brock about the whole situation because Jericho is a professional.
Yeah, he's great.
He is great looking out for his fellow wrestlers. Lesnar, he's boring. I'm tired of him. I want him out of WWE right away. Go back to UFC where you can fight and punch people in the face for real if that's what you really want to do. Don't cold cock Braun Strowman because he needs you a little too hard.
You're going to be right.
All right. Go fight. Even if you stick around, I want you nowhere near a title.
Yeah, but he lays down the template for what they should do with Ronda Rousey. Just have her like sort of mill about, laugh a little bit, get purple in the face, and then just armbar the crap out of people. That'd be great if they just started doing that with her. I'd love it.
Okay.
Have Paul Heyman manager. Look, man, Lesnar's best for business. You can't deny that.
That's
he pops ratings.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
He pops ratings.
Whatever.
He does. Best for business.
But still, he pops ratings, but his segments are boring.
If people watch, yeah, I don't disagree with that. But there's always the thing about Brock is that there's always that element of unpredictability, kind of like with that Braun stuff.
The last time he was really interesting by himself was after he lost the title to Seth after WrestleMania 31. This is 3 years ago, 4 years ago almost. And he just destroyed everybody.
Yeah.
That was interesting, just him by himself doing something. Since then, he just, that's all he does. He's in the ring. He bounces a little bit, smiles occasionally, something Heyman says.
Yeah.
And he gets well, that's not true. He told Heath Slater he didn't give a damn about his kids.
He didn't give an S about his kids.
Yeah. So that was kind of funny.
No, I know. That was good. Here's the thing about
that's like his standout character moment in the last 5 years.
And that was just him shooting. Here's the thing about Brock. You're absolutely right. He's
boring.
He gets bored. Easily.
And he is boring.
I don't think he's boring, though. I think when he's got something fun to work with, then he's fun. You know, but that's pretty much everybody.
Here's the other thing about him now. So predictable. Not only how he wrestles, but now that they've, over the past year, they've established how he wins matches. It's the same thing. You know he's going to win. No one's going to beat him until Reigns of WrestleMania.
Well,
there's
that's
no intrigue. There's no
after
drama.
After the Universal title thing is done with, he will move on and do some other stuff
to
that's
lose
more fun.
80 pounds, go to 205 live.
Well, that we can agree on. I'd love to see that. Speaking of that, Adam Mayhem has a question. Speaking of 205 live, Adam Mayhem has a question.
All right.
Hey, because he fought and beat 205
Mecha
live
Wolf
competitor MechaWolf 450.
Alternate. He was MechaWolf 450 is alternate in the Cruiserweight Classic.
That's right, yeah. Anyways, we have a question from Adam Mayhem. Let's see what he has to say.
Buenas tardes, friend of University. Bienvenidos to another edition of Chit Chat with the Champ. Now, Steven Larson, I have a question to throw you guys' way. With the fact that WWE is going into dual-branded pay-per-views, and obviously there's like 19,000 different champions, this is what I want you guys to debate. What would be better for the product and the company? For wrestlers, for pay-per-views to be only basically just title matches and then that's it. Or for WWE to go more on the New Japan route of having, you know, champions working six-man tags and tag team and four corners and all this. And then some titles be defended at some pay-per-views. Which one is better? I'll let you guys debate that. Too sweet, guys.
Thank you, Adam Mayhem. Oh, I go first. Yeah, I think they should do something like this from time to time. So one of my complaints about SmackDown specifically, as the pay-per-view calendar exists now, there's a pay-per-view for each brand every other month, is that SmackDown far too often has to spin their wheels.
Yeah.
On their weekly show to get to blow-offs, payoffs, yada yada, on the pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. Now that each brand has spots on pay-per-views each month, you don't have to worry about that so much. But every now and again, there's a feud that needs to breathe.
Yeah.
That they need to stretch out. So why not employ a few more tag matches a la New Japan? It saves wear and tear on the wrestlers. That you can't argue with. It saves wear and tear on the wrestlers. When Okada wrestles like 20 matches, solo matches over the course of the year.
That's true.
Whereas what Jinder Mahal wrestled, 180-something.
Jinder.
That's a lot. That's a lot of wear and tear on athletes.
Mother.
More so, I think, if they're going to do this New Japan tag route, do it more often on house shows. I know people paid because they want to see Nakamura in action, one-on-one people. But still, you can't have wrestlers wrestling close to 200 matches, solo matches a year. It's too much on the human body. That's why people are getting injured so much. Mm-hmm. Have them in tag matches more often, on house shows, on Raws, on SmackDowns. Kind of employ it generally, not necessarily on the dual brand pay-per-views. So the wrestlers get a break from time to time. Their schedule is grueling enough as it is. Just like Seth Rollins. This past week, he wrestled for 65 minutes on Raw. And he got probably Tuesday, Wednesday off. And Thursday, he's right back at it. Mm-hmm. Put him in an 8-man tag match. Please, give him a break.
Mm-hmm.
That guy goes out and busts his tail every week on television. Give him a breather from time to time. Please, let him actually have a career longer than 5 years in WWE. He's already blown out his knee once, injured his knee a second time. If he keeps wrestling this type of schedule, it's going to take a horrible toll on his body. Give him a break. More multi-man tag matches. Across the board, and even sprinkle a few in on these pay-per-views. Yes, I'm all for it.
Okay, no, it's a terrible idea, and I'll tell you why. Whenever New Japan has a pay-per-view...
Hold on, I got one point to make. Sorry. Here's another thing. When WWE Creative is firing on all cylinders, what are they doing more often than not? Weaving narratives together.
Yeah.
You can use these tag matches, 6, 8, 10, 12-man tag matches.
12, that's good.
To interweave stories. Yes, do it.
Okay, no, you don't do it. You don't do it. You know why? Because New Japan is kind of annoying in the fact that, yes, okay, does let the wrestlers rest? Yes. The only good point you made there was doing tag matches, like large tag matches on the house show circuit. There is zero reason why anybody should be wrestling a singles match on the house show circuit. You should always be doing multi-man matches. You still get the live experience of being a WWE show. Without the wear and tear on the body. That is actually a fantastic idea. However, these are pay-per-views we're talking about here. My main beef with New Japan is that they put on these multi-day pay-per-view events where there's literally three matches that actually matter a damn. Why aren't those three matches just on one show for one day?
Here's
I don't need five different New Beginning shows. All, like, one day you get a U.S. title match. The next day you get, like, maybe a junior heavyweight tag match. The third day, the fourth day you get,
skip, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, the exactly. You get, like, the Intercontinental Championship defended. I'm making my point. And then the rest of the 4 hours of each of those shows are all just these clusterfuck tag matches.
You know why? Because they're doing story stuff in all those matches for the eventual singles matches of those competitors.
I mean, kind of, but man, do we need... Here's the thing. What they accomplish in a 20-man, five or six... In a 20-minute, six-man tag match, they could accomplish with 1 2-minute backstage segment the way that WWE does it.
That's just not how New Japan does things, man.
I understand that's not how they do things. I'm just illustrating that I would be more engaged if they took all those four shows that they're putting on and the three matches that actually matter to them, put them in one amazing show on New Japan. That's not a route I want to see the WWE go in.
Here's the thing, though. I like that they... kind of like they do that for all the other shows, but not for Wrestle Kingdom. It makes Wrestle Kingdom feel more special.
Well, Wrestle Kingdom would feel special regardless. I like a lot of stuff they do. I love the G1. I love tournaments. Tournaments are great.
Yeah, they are.
Tournaments are fantastic. But you always know you're getting these, you know, these tag matches that just don't mean a damn. So why am I even watching them? Because you never see anything cool. You never say, wow, did you hear Meltzer talk about that 6-star tag match? Unless it's like an actual tag match, not like one of these, a bunch of singles competitors or factions or whatever, all in the tag match. They're meaningless. They don't have any meaning to them. So why bother doing them? Just put all your good matches on one show. No, I do not want to see the WWE go that route with New Japan. I do agree with your idea that they should be doing more tag matches on the house show circuit. That's a good idea. But no, they shouldn't be doing it. I think everybody freaking out about the dual brand pay-per-views. They're freaking out for no reason because the dual brand pay-per-views are going to be longer than the old pay-per-views that were single brand. That's fine. It's by an hour, so they bring it down. And also on top of that, the WWE has been trending not towards multi-man tag matches, but to multi-man matches. They already have the Elimination Chamber. They've got Money in the Bank. They've got Survivor Series. So those three major pay-per-views that have multi-man singles matches in them. You've got, and then like, what was it? At the Rumble, you had Brock versus Kane versus
Strowman.
Braun. At Fastlane, you've got five people
in the title match. Though, to have every title match have 16 people in it.
Well, when it gets
why
to
not
that,
put 16 people in a tag that point, match?
Because I hate tag matches.
People relax.
Every man
rest
for themselves.
Their bodies. You can build stories of the match, get more people on TV.
You don't build stories. I don't like when they building stories through tag matches. That's the worst way to build a story. Next question, Thayerth the Body. He's got a 10-second question. That's why he's my favorite.
You guys have unlimited resources to start a brand new wrestling promotion, and you need to hire a head booker. Who do you choose, Triple H or Gato?
Thank you, Thayer.
Thank you, Thayer Thabata.
You go first.
It's Triple H. The best wrestling, the best storytelling, I'm sorry, the best wrestling is New Japan right now, but the best storytelling right now in wrestling, there is absolutely New Japan for their storytelling. They rely, I really wonder about this. I think Gato just says, I want this match, I want this match, I want this match. And then you guys just get there however you want to. So the Young Bucks started doing Being the Elite, where they go ahead and actually tell stories through their cheesy little home movies.
Yeah, but they have permission from New Japan to do that.
Yeah, I know, but
and
I wonder.
Ring of Honor.
I'm legitimately curious, like, how much input does Ring of Honor and New Japan have in
I don't know how. Like, I agree. I think Gato probably says, we're going to have this match here.
Right,
here,
exactly.
We'll culminate this feud here, but the individual story beats, like what they say in the promos backstage after events and stuff, I don't know.
Right. It's probably very loose because, I mean, what is he going to give him a script? No, of course not. So he probably says, hey, you know, yeah, like you said, we're going to get to this point by this time, so just do whatever to get to that point, which is fantastic, but not everybody are the Young Bucks. Not everybody can be being the Elite. Storytelling, Triple H and NXT, that's the way of the future. That's the way that WWE hopefully will end up going. NXT right now is the best storytelling wrestling on TV. Proof is in the pudding. Triple H is the man in NXT. That's what you do. You look at Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream. It was great. You even take a look at the storytelling during the match. Literally one backstage segment led to Velveteen Dream versus Cassius Ohno. And look at the story being told in that match. It was fantastic. It doesn't get better in NXT. Triple H is the man.
Yeah, it does get better in NXT. It's in New Japan. Gato is the man.
He's not the wrestlers, though, is he?
No, but that's the thing. He gives the wrestlers freedom to do what they do best, which is wrestle and tell stories in the ring.
That's not booking. That's just saying go out and do whatever you want to do.
But he's the one putting the card together, putting the matches together, putting the building the stories long term, something that's been lacking in WWE product for a very long time. We had this great series of matches between Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada that individually, each match told a story, but collectively, they told a story. He had a part in that. I don't know if he was there booking spots beat by beat on a legal pad a la Macho Man and Steamboat years back, but he had a part in that. He lets the wrestlers do what they do best, wrestle, tell stories, entertain the fans. I'm sure he's involved in the creative process of saying, well, here's why you're doing this. This is why this match is happening. But he's not going to give him a script. Remember Kenny Omega in an interview with Sports Illustrated was criticizing WWE because he said some wrestlers have their footwork choreographed and it kills the spontaneity and the emotion of the match. They don't do that in New Japan. They don't. They let the wrestlers wrestle.
They don't do that in NXT either. They let the wrestlers wrestle.
You don't know that.
You cannot tell me. Yeah, I do know that.
You don't know that.
You can't tell me.
You don't know that.
You can't tell me that Johnny Gargano. Have you been watching wrestling for 6 weeks now?
No.
Do you not see the difference that we've talked about a million times over between the wrestling and WWE main roster and NXT? Do you really think that on main roster, how many people have talked about what happens on main roster versus NXT?
Yeah, I know.
They let them go in NXT.
Yes.
Johnny Gargano versus Cien Almas, you think that's going to happen on main roster? No, of course not.
It might happen on 205 Live.
Now it might because who's in charge?
Yeah, Triple H.
Triple H!
Yeah, Triple H is a huge improvement over Vince McMahon. They might let them do that on Mania, something like that. I'm not saying in NXT they choreograph footwork, but they go out and block the match in advance. They don't call a ton of spots in the ring. That's what Omega was alluding to.
No, they don't. They don't do that in New Japan either.
That's exactly what Kenny Omega was saying.
Did you not see that? Sports Illustrated.
No,
video
I saw that. I saw that. Listen to Kenny
with
Omega
with the Young Bucks.
Yes,
literally.
Booking out a match. I understand.
Booking the match. Let with me Naito
finish.
And Bushi.
Let me finish. So I was listening to Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho's podcast talking about their match at Wrestle Kingdom.
Kenny Omega will take any shot he can against the WWE.
This is not he didn't reference, I believe, WWE once during this entire segment. So he said, yes, they went to the dojo in Tokyo, blocked out the major beats of the match. They did. However, during the actual show at Wrestle Kingdom, they had a spot where Kenny was going to climb up the scaffolding, do a moonsault off it. Will Ospreay did the exact same spot earlier in the show. Young Bucks told Kenny.
So
without communicating with each other, during the match, they improv the spot that they ended up doing, where Kenny did a double stomp off the scaffolding onto the table onto Jericho. I don't know in WWE they have that liberty to do that kind of stuff to that extent. At least, you know, the rank and file wrestlers, top of the card guys Vince trusts, maybe.
I'm not talking about the main Raw. I'm not talking about WWE. I'm talking about NXT, and I guarantee you they do in NXT because we've seen so much good wrestling
there.
I would
think the main guys, the guys that Triple H trusts, yeah, developmental guys, no. No.
Well, define developmental. Leo Rush, I bet, could.
Maybe.
I bet he could. Ricochet can.
Maybe. But like Cassius Ohno, yeah.
Do you think the Young Lions have liberty to do that stuff?
No. They're only allowed to do like six moves.
In New Japan.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it depends on how much experience you have. That's probably, you know, regardless of where you are, depending on how much experience you have.
My whole point is WWE's style of wrestling, the way they book their matches, is probably far more structured.
I'm not talking about WWE. Yeah. I'm talking about NXT.
NXT is a part of WWE.
And I doubt it's that much more structured than New Japan.
It probably is.
How can you say that when the wrestling is so different?
Here's another reason, probably why. Because the production aspect of NXT is far more structured than what we see in New Japan. How many times in New Japan do we see spots kind of get missed because of direction? Fairly often. Whereas in NXT, that hardly ever happens because they will go and book out the match and rehearse it with camera and production and all that.
Sometimes it's like they go out of their way to miss
stuff. No, I know. Sometimes they miss stuff in NXT too.
I really doubt. You can't tell me you look at Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn and say that, oh, that looks like it's like much more blocked out than like something that Shinsuke would have done in New Japan.
I don't know.
I just don't think it is. Like, I look at it, and in my opinion,
if there's a spectrum of choreographed wrestling, WWE main roster's over here. If we're just using WWE, NXT, and New Japan, WWE main roster, I'm not there booking matches. It's just my instinct, and I have to make an argument for New Japan.
How we feel. No, go ahead.
So WWE is over here on highly choreographed. There's a huge gap. NXT is probably about right here.
Okay.
And then New Japan's probably right
okay,
there.
Okay, I'm good with that.
That's my whole point.
This right here. No, yeah. It isn't. That wasn't your whole point. Your point was saying that my point was over here.
That NXT was more probably a bit more choreographed than New Japan. That's
you
whole point
said
I was
a
make.
Bunch more. You said a lot more.
I might say much more. Which
I like when we yell at each other, though. It makes for a good show.
You're wrong. I'm right. Next question.
Christian! At last, you all. What is it? Come on, don't drink now. At last, you're on. Let's see what Christian has to say.
Hey, friendos. It's the Hall of Famer Christian here with a Matt Chat question for this week. With my return to Matt Chat this week, here at the gym, actually. Getting the workout in. My question to you guys, Steve, you might like this one, is what is the most real moment in WWE history? We have Brian Pillman's Got a Gun versus Edge Lita live sex show. What was more real? and wide. Two sweet guys. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Christian.
Oh, man, obviously. The.
Oh, wait. Who goes first?
I'll just go first because I was going to anyway.
No, I have to go first.
You have to?
Here.
Our show, we can do it.
No, we alternate who goes first by question.
Very well.
The most real moment? Oh, it's a live sex show because there is an exposed breast. That's real. Yeah. You can't fake that.
Not just an exposed breast.
Nipple.
A nipple, yes. Edge might have had a real quasi-erection.
Well, yeah, it was. We don't need to each make an argument on this one because this is all great stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Edge had a 50%.
Yeah, it's like quasi, boner. Somewhat of an erection.
He had
yes.
pretty much a boner. But then we don't know how much more of a boner it was when he went under the
sheet.
Yeah,
yeah. We don't know exactly what happened under the sheet. There could have been some actual sex stuff going.
So if I recall correctly.
And if that's the case, that makes it the most real segment in all WWE.
I don't have to bring up my notes. But at one point, I think he puts his head down in her junk.
Uh-huh.
And then I think at one point, she puts her head down in his junk.
Uh-huh.
They both actually kind of, here's my thing about that. They both seem, here's my counter to you saying that could have been real. They both seem like kind of sweet people that are kind of like on the nerdier side of things.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure he would have put his mouth actually on her genitalia.
Oh, no, I doubt that. But he was in the vicinity because he took her underwear off with right. his teeth, right?
I really hope that she like Dutch ovened him.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
And farted.
That would make the segment the most real then.
Well, yeah, but it's supposed to be a live sex show, not a live Dutch oven.
No, I know.
Not like a live shaming with fart.
But the audience couldn't hear the fart.
It was a very real moment. However, in terms of simulated near death snuff films, you have to admit that the Brian Pillman gun scene
here's the one
was
thing,
both real and shocking.
Here's the one thing that kind of disqualifies it in my mind.
Nobody died.
Well, is that there's two things. One, you had Kevin Kelly lurking outside on the property the whole time giving updates. And two,
right.
like if you know Stone Cold's coming, what like there's a cameraman who's got his camera like pointed at the door, the back yeah. door that Stone Cold breaks.
Yeah.
How come someone doesn't do anything before it gets to the point where it escalates to where a gun's involved?
Yeah. Well, because then it wouldn't have been as real. But he busted out that gun. Let me ask you something. Do you think here's the biggest question, actually, because this will determine the answer to this entire question.
Uh-huh.
Was the gun real? Was it Pillman's gun? Because if it wasn't a prop gun
mm-hmm.
that didn't belong to him, then it's fake. If he said, no, I have a gun to make this a bit more real. I wonder what the staging of that was like. Hey, we're going to send some people out to, was it Brian Pillman's actual house?
I don't know. I don't know either.
We're going to send some people out to your house. We're going to get this. How can we escalate this? Brian Pillman says, I have a gun that I can bust out and do this and then do this.
Yeah.
Shockingly.
Yeah.
If that's the case, that's the most real shit that's ever been on WWE. If it was a prop gun and not him, live sex show works. Because of the nipple.
I don't know. I feel like a.
Because of the nipple and
I feel like
boner.
A real couple expressing their love.
Yeah.
Doing
love.
Yeah.
Yeah,
via the act of lovemaking.
Yeah, via doing sex.
That's about as real as it gets.
That is pretty real.
It's really real.
Because I think they really liked each other.
Well, yeah, they were an item.
That's real.
They really liked each other. Right. They were really a couple at that point. Maybe, so that's about as real as it gets.
Maybe live sex show works. I'm okay with that. Because the bottom line is, we saw a real nipple.
Yeah.
So, and there was a real 50% boner.
Yeah, there was some real chub there.
That chub was ready to have sex.
or was on the precipice, yeah.
Almost ready to have sex.
It would have taken a little bit more for it to be ready.
Yeah, just a little bit more rubbing. Next up from Daryl the Cat Takahashi. Let's see what he has to say.
What's good, Steve Morrison, many friendos out there. It's Cat Daryl Takahashi. My question for Matt Chat this week is, I was talking to a buddy of mine. We were talking about what was the biggest burial in WWE history. And the two that were brought up, which brings this question, is what do you think was a bigger burial? John Cena burying the Nexus back in 2010, or Triple H burying Booker T back in WrestleMania X8? Thanks, boys.
Thank you, the cat.
I go first.
Yeah.
You really can't argue with this.
No, you can't.
It's Booker T, Triple H, because Triple H was playing a racist bastard when he said, I believe the words were something like, a guy that looks like you could never be like a guy that looks like me. He should have lost. Triple H was a racist bastard. He should have lost.
Yeah, he should have.
Like, that's obviously the character he was playing. Why did Booker T lose? The racist asshole always gets his comeuppance.
Yeah.
So, yes, that was the worst burial. What Cena did was, look, Wade Barrett, that was his best chance to be a big timer, but he had plenty of other chances, and that's just par for the course for Cena. Triple H buried the crap out of Booker T as a racist villain character and never let Booker T get his you know, his shining moment. So, yes, it's Triple H.
That is the correct answer.
There you go.
It is the correct answer.
It is, man. There's not
much argument I can make.
You can't argue against a racist villain not getting his comeuppance. That's the worst burial maybe in the history.
It's because real bad.
The problem with it, beyond that stuff, it didn't follow your typical... That's when the Reign of Terror of Triple H was at its worst. Because it didn't follow your typical... what you're supposed to do in wrestling. Your bad guy has to get his comeuppance from the good guy. That just has to happen. I don't know why it wouldn't have happened. He just, maybe he thought that that was in the grand scheme of whatever his plan was. That was a stepping stone for him to get even more heel heat. It just didn't make any sense.
No, it didn't make any sense. And you know, if that was his justification, there's got to be times when the hero...
Yeah, I know.
Has to win.
I know. You, even as a villain, you have to get knocked down to come back stronger.
Yeah.
So it was totally that. That's terrible.
Yeah, that's by far the worst.
It's so cringy, and it's the kind of when it's the kind of thing you can never do today, then it's bad. You know what I mean? Anyways, I mean, you know, in terms of societal implications, not like, you know, well, you can't bleed today. That's cool. I wish they'd bring bleeding back. AO Worm has a question. Best promo battle about best promo battles. AO Worm has a question. Let's see what he has to say.
What's good, everybody? AO Worm here back on the Match Chat debate. Steven Larson. So what is the best promo battle you guys have seen in wrestling history? For me, it's Jay Lethal versus Ric Flair back in TNA when Jay Lethal was imitating Ric Flair. And my eyes say it was amazing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I'll send you guys a link to the video showing you exactly what I'm talking about, or just to refresh you guys. But that's my answer. But I want to know, do you guys have any other battles that you might have seen? Battle of Words, that was just amazing. So let me know, guys. Too sweet. I'm out.
Thank you, AO Worm.
You go ahead.
Oh, I go ahead? All right. I thought of a lot of different things. Some of the more recent ones, Cena versus The Miz, lead up to Mania last year, a lot of good stuff. But then I came back around to... The Rock and Cena built up to the, both either their WrestleMania matches had some good stuff, but I thought of one promo. Excuse me, this is the post lunch Matt Chat where I burp a lot. Sorry. The one promo in the lead up to their match WrestleMania 28, the first one, where The Rock did a promo. Cena comes out, interrupts him, does some basic, you know, the back and forth between them the whole time is pretty consistent. Rock, Mr. Hollywood, full of himself, huge ego. Didn't care about WWE, John Cena, WWE lifer. That was pretty much, at least from Cena's perspective, the framing of things. And this was the promo where Cena, about halfway through, takes his wristbands off and says, I don't need notes on my wrist to get me through my promos. And I've never seen The Rock have cry face before.
Rock totally had cry face.
And at the end of this, he had cry face.
He did!
Like, stack his cry face up against Miz and Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
They're on the same level.
They're all on the same level.
John Cena, say what you will about him, no one gives other wrestlers cry face like John Cena.
That's true.
Nobody.
That's true.
With the possible exception of the person you're going to mention.
That's right. I'm going to talk about CM Punk.
Because I think he almost gave Triple H cry face.
He almost gave Triple H cry. What was the line he used on Triple H?
Oh, there were several.
Was it the
movie? Oh, it was a straight to DVD.
The straight to DVD
one.
Because
he says something to Triple H or, about his movie The Chaperone. And Triple H says, yeah, where's your movie, Punk?
He said, it went straight to DVD, just like yours.
Oof.
You're absolutely right about that. That segment with Cena Rock was great because as soon as he says, nice tattoo, referring to the notes on his wrist.
Yeah.
And Rock tried to get aggressive with him and tried to rattle him.
He didn't say a word afterwards.
No.
Oh, sorry.
He tried to rattle him by getting in his face.
Yeah.
Because then he got closer to him after he said that, and Cena didn't flinch.
Nope.
Did not flinch. Now, go fast forward another year.
Was no, this is before.
This is before. Okay, we had that's right because Punk referenced that match coming up.
This is probably summer. This is up to SummerSlam. Their SummerSlam match, the title unification one. So that's SummerSlam 2011.
Yeah. Okay. So I had to go back and look at this. At first, I wanted to say Rock Austin But because I thought there was like a sit down thing with them and JR.
They played a ton of good stuff
before WrestleMania 15. I saw one from 17, which is the only one I could see, and it really wasn't all that great because Rock wasn't like at his best heel persona.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, man, I know there was some good Punk Cena stuff. They were literally the two best talkers that we had at the time. And sure enough, it was the contract signing for that match, the unification match at SummerSlam. It was Punk and Cena, and yes, Punk brought out a clip of The Rock talking crap about Cena, and Cena laid out his case perfectly. They were so, I go back to this all the time. This is one of my favorite feuds ever. They were so perfectly matched in terms of their character. And back in the Tree of Woe days, we would always be harping on Chongo for being such a mark for CM Punk, or for Cena, because we were such marks for CM Punk, because CM Punk kept it so real and he never got rattled, and it was so awesome.
Yeah.
Because he had John Cena, who I think actually really liked Punk. I think they really liked each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Cena also knew that Punk was one of the few guys who could match wits with him on the mic.
Yeah.
And they had Triple H standing there. Triple H looked like he hated CM Punk. You could see it all over his face.
John Laurinaitis didn't seem terribly fun, especially when Punk was talking about the people that must have just been released.
Oh, that had just been released. Like, I think he said Friday. So that must have been 3 days earlier, mm-hmm, when he said, oh, you want to talk about
being spineless, being cowardly?
Being spineless, being gutless. He says, you call me gutless? He said, you have him. He says, tell me, Johnny, did you get on a plane, go to Florida, and tell Harry, not David Smith Jr.
Yeah.
Did you tell him face to face? And he puts over these guys who just got fired. He says, did you go get on a plane and tell Chris Masters, who worked so hard to return, that, you know, you wish him best in your future? Or did you do it over the phone?
Yeah.
It was so freaking great. And the thing is, the segment they have on WWE.com or their YouTube page is like 17 minutes long, which is a long time.
Yeah.
And they jump cut, they flash cut.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this entire segment was like 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
It was probably a good chunk of time, but I would just say that you can't take your eyes off it. It's two talkers who were so marvelous that you cannot stop. And then as soon as Triple H tries to get a word in, CM Punk claps back so quick,
mm-hmm,
and just shuts him up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of that stuff was probably legitimate.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when Punk, or when Triple H tries to say, hey, how did your movie role go? And CM Punk claps back like that, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. There's a couple instances where, like, Cena was about to legit start laughing at something.
I know.
It's pretty
good.
And
you can it's just the two best guys on the mic, and yours were the same. Cena and Rock were so great.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I got to give it to those. I'm sure there are plenty of other ones. I just, you know, it's hard to think of them like off the top of my head.
I know,
like, what they are, but I mean, I know there's been Rock Austin stuff that, like, talk about the two, but like my personal two best talkers of all time.
It wasn't really a promo battle, but when Flair came back, fire me again, fire me again, fire me again, fire.
Yeah, there was no battle there. It was just Flair. Anyways, let's see here. Mr. Eddie Camaro is up next. Let's see what he has to say.
El Ignorable, Eater of Tacos here. I got one question for you. I read somewhere that they're going to have Leo Rush bypass NXT and go to that Cruiserweight tournament. Now my question is, do you think that is a good idea to bypass NXT and go straight to the tournament or not? Steve, you take yes. Larson, you take no. Steve, too sweet. Larson, handshake.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you, Eddie.
Oh, I go first this time. Do I?
No, you said.
Oh, yeah, you go first.
Yeah, yes. We don't need Leo Rush and NXT. NXT is, they're going big with Lars Sullivan. Well, we already saw Lars Sullivan versus Leo Rush anyways. We already have like a fast guy in Ricochet. Man, that would actually preclude us seeing. Okay, how about this? One match, we get Ricochet versus Leo Rush. It's Leo Rush's last match in NXT.
Loser leaves NXT.
Loser leaves NXT. He goes on a 205 Live and he absolutely kills it there. I just want to see him in 205 Live right now. Triple H has taken over. They're doing just amazing things with the wrestling aspect of the show. My God, this match between Mustafa Ali and Jack Gallagher this past week on 205 Live was absolutely electric. It's so great. And I'm really just anxious to see Leo Rush in there, especially Mark Andrews is there now. Oh, my God. Could you imagine the series of matches we can get between Leo Rush and Mark Andrews? I cannot wait for that. There's so much great talent in 205 Live right now that would match up so great with Leo Rush. That, yeah, screw NXT. I mean, my thing about NXT, maybe the biggest case to be made, besides Ricochet, there isn't really anybody else who can match Lio Rush with what he does best. And in 205 Live, that's where all the people are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my argument.
Here's my argument. No, let Lio Rush stay in NXT for a little bit. He's young. He still needs some time to develop. He's great in the ring. Can't argue with that. But in terms of the production aspect of wrestling, his first match, I think, the ref told him to look yes! at the hard cam.
Hard cam. Hard cam.
He needs to learn the WWE style of producing a show, which is vastly different than work in the indies. There's that. Second, right now, 205 Live is really hitting its stride, and I really don't want them to do anything right now to interrupt that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that means keeping Lio Rush in NXT for a while, where you can have great matches, not only against Ricochet, but shoot, give me Lio Rush versus Aleister Black versus a ton of other talents, Adam Cole. Be great matches. Let him learn the WWE way of doing things a bit more while 205 is hitting its stride. We just saw Hideo Itami get brought up to 205 Live about a month or so back.
Mm-hmm.
He's already lost in the shuffle. I know there's a lot, a huge deal made about Buddy Murphy getting called up, which was great. He won his first match. If you look at the brackets, I don't know if he's going to win the second match.
Who's he fighting in the second round?
I believe Mustafa Ali.
Yeah, he's not going to, but the massive difference between those guys and Lio Rush. Lio Rush is a once in a generation.
I understand
talent.
That. I mean, but he's young. He's 21, 22 years old. He has time. Let him develop. Let him learn the WWE way of doing things in NXT. I'm not saying he needs to be there for 2 years. Give him 6 months to a year. Learn how they do, how they operate WWE. Then bring up the 205 Live. Wait till this tournament's over. Wait till whether it be Cedric or Roderick Strong, Mustafa Ali, Drew Gulak, whoever it is, gets their title, gets a decent run. Bring him up. Have him be the new upstart challenger.
Let me ask you something.
What?
I hate to bring this up because I really like him, or I liked him in moments in NXT, but you bring up Hideo Itami. What's his place in WWE?
I don't know.
Because I don't think it's 205 Live. He's a striker.
Yeah.
And there are two styles that are really prevalent and should be in 205 Live, and that's high-flying and it's
technical.
Technical.
Yeah.
And you got guys like Drew Gulak, who are just marvelous technical wrestlers.
And you have high flyers like Mustafa Ali and stuff, yeah.
Exactly. And a strike, like especially a striker, just doesn't.
A striker can do it.
So far, it hasn't worked.
A striker can do it if the pace is quick, if they can keep up with the pace of the high flyer.
Like Jack Gallagher's a striker who can keep up with the pace.
Because he's also a good technical wrestler.
Yeah, he's also a good technical wrestler. He's small and he's quick.
And I think the issue that has faced Hideo Itami thus far is, and I don't know if this is how he likes to work or just the way things have gone, he works, his matches have been at a more meticulous pace.
Yeah.
By and large. And yeah, he's a good striker. He can do a little bit of flying. He's not a bad technical wrestler. But I think if the pace picked up, then it would alleviate a lot of those issues. Because if you're in there striking and you're just striking, you know, lightning quick, you know, dodging other people's moves, reversing them, you know, leading to striking opportunities, I think that'd be really cool and really exciting.
He's never come off as all that fast to me, though.
Mm-hmm.
Even at his best in NXT, like, I thought him and Cassius Ohno had some really good stuff because you have Cassius Ohno, this giant striking guy who can do cool flippy stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have Hideo Itami, who's more of a gritty striker guy.
Yeah.
That really worked for me, but I don't know. I think he just comes off as, I don't know, out of place in 205 Live.
Hitami's match against Bobby Roode was good for the NXT title. That was a good match.
Yeah, no, that was a really good match. That was a really good
match.
But
again, it was meticulously paced.
Yeah.
This was a slower pace. But no, I agree. It seemed like he would match up better in terms of style and pace against heavyweights, but, you know, they seem intent on putting me on 205 Live.
Yeah. I don't know. How tall is he?
Well, he's probably 5'9", 5'10", I'd guess.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, 5'9". Yeah, man, I don't know.
What, 185?
182, yeah. Jeez. Anyways, moving on, we have another question.
About how large Daniel Bryan was. I understand now times are way different, that if Daniel Bryan came in WWE now, he'd go to 205 Live too.
Oh, I don't know. They'd give him a pass. He's
I'm saying Daniel Bryan circa 2009. He would go to 205 Live.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, he's a Daniel Bryan circa 2009. Is that that's when he came in? Yeah, that's when he came
roughly
in.
2009, yeah, 2010. Yeah,
he was a Ricochet level talent on the indies. Ricochet's not going to go to 205 Live.
No, I think they would with Daniel Bryan though.
I don't know.
Ricochet's a bit larger.
Yeah, I know, but Daniel Bryan, number one, was able to bulk up
a bit. Here's the thing. Daniel Bryan would either go to NXT or he'd go to 205 Live, and he'd probably go to NXT before going to 205 Live.
Oh, he'd definitely go to NXT.
Yeah.
That's for sure. It's just certain guys like Finn Balor. I mean, granted, he came around before 205 Live, but, like, that dude was... When you have that level of charisma that Daniel Bryan had, I don't think they'd have put him on 205 Live.
Yeah, I don't know.
Are there any overwhelmingly... Are there any guys... I can think of one. Cedric Alexander right now is the one guy who I think, yeah, he could have gone, but he's not like an overwhelming charisma guy. But in terms of like what he can do in the ring and how big he kind of looks,
yeah.
He could be main roster.
Yeah.
I can't say that for a lot of other guys.
No, I know. I know what you mean.
So, let's see here. Next, we've got Douglas Dozier Jr.
Let's see what he has to say.
Junior.
Hello, Going In Raw, Matt Chat. Friendo Universe, my name is Douglas T. Dozier Jr., a.k.a. The Money Monster. First-time patron, long-time fan. I got a question for you. Steve Larson, with all the multitudes and multitudes and multitudes of talent in the WWE brand, why haven't they expanded into maybe another brand, maybe a green brand? So I'd like for you to give me a title card. What would you call this green brand? Who would the GM be? Who would the men's top champion be? What would that belt be called? Same for the women's. Same for a third ubiquitous title. Same for the tag team titles. It's all very formulaic. Just one more day. Maybe Thursday nights replace SmackDown? I don't know. You guys are the guys. Tell me. Peace.
Thank you, Douglas.
So much energy from Douglas.
Yeah, man.
Wow. I'm hyped now.
I know.
Talk about this green brand. What are we going to call the green brand, Larson? Let's collaborate on this.
We have Raw. We have SmackDown. We have NXT.
Okay.
We have 205 Live.
Yeah.
So we have red. We have blue. We have purple and yellow.
Yeah.
So we need a green brand.
We need a green brand. Okay. What's like... Okay. So similar to like SmackDown, what's something we could call this green brand? What's like a popular... How about this? Ooh, how about this?
No, I got it.
Okay.
WWE buys Impact. Impact has green in their color palette, right?
No, man.
Not anymore. They did at one point.
Oh, that was Global Force Wrestling.
Fine. They buy Impact, rebrand it with green.
No, I don't want that. What would be like the difference then? It would just be Impact wrestlers?
Yeah, but they instead of having it up in Canada still, they bring it out to the West Coast. So it's like the West Coast version of NXT.
No, this is what you do. I got it.
What?
The latest takeovers. No, the only takeover they do this with is Brooklyn, where they do the black and white thing. It's not a green brand. It's a black and white brand.
Well, that's a question.
I don't care what Douglas says. I'm changing it from green brand. Green's a terrible color.
Look at this.
Ugly.
You're hung up on the black and white color palette.
I think it'd be great. Black and white is the color palette for the...
All right, but this aesthetics aside, what is this going to be? What is this brand going to be? How is it going to differentiate itself from everything else?
I had it in my head, and then you started yelling at me.
All tag teams.
No, that's terrible.
A year-long tournament.
Let's think of it like this. So 205 Live is kind of becoming the PWG of WWE. NXT is the Ring of Honor.
Uh-huh.
Raw and SmackDown is Raw and SmackDown. What's another promotion that we can take and say this is the WWE version of XYZ?
CMLL. That's too much crossover with 205 Live.
Lucha Vavoom.
Yeah, something like that.
Where they do some burlesque-esque. No, I don't like
How
that.
How about idea. This? You know that one survey, TV-14 version of ECW.
That's what I was
going to
say. I was going to say ECW. That's what I was going to say.
ECW.
Thank you. Yes, that's where I was going. That's why I was going to be black and white, because I was like, wait, ECW is like purple and then sometimes
and red.
Yeah. No, black and white. ECW, oh my god, that would be great.
Hints of green.
Yes. I don't know. I don't want hints of green.
Just hints.
Why? What would motivate that?
Because it's green brand.
Machinima just rebranding green.
Yeah.
Kind of want to stay away from that.
Well, it's too much like that.
Yeah, I don't like... This is not ECW.
No, it's not.
This is not Extreme Championship Wrestling. Black and white, ECW. How about this? Every match or every card has blood on it, so it's all shot in black and white. It looks like that black and white version of Logan.
Okay.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Next, Bobby Mincy, the man, the future shirt. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, friendos. Bobby Mincy here, stealing time at work to deliver my new Matt Chat question, which is actually a rhetoric of Jason King's Matt Chat question, I think, from last week. The Undisputed Era is in NXT. The Balor Club is on Raw, and AJ's all by himself on SmackDown, but what if, like Jason King stated, what if the Young Bucks went to SmackDown with him and they formed the Elite, to where you had a three-man faction on each team, and they started invading their respective brands and start accumulating a three-way feud. At WrestleMania, that three feud starts to actually come to a conclusion. So you have the Undisputed Era, you have the Elite, and you have Balor Club all going together in a maybe tornado three-way tag match where it's just absolute chaos. Who wins in the end? Let me know, guys.
Thank you, Bobby Mincy.
There's no future shirt. You just have like a regular shirt on.
No future shirt.
What a bummer, anyways.
I go first.
Yeah, it doesn't matter on this one.
Real Balor Club gets the W. Here's why.
Why?
Finn Balor, original leader of Bullet Club. True. Founder of Bullet Club.
True.
So, I mean, this idea, this is what I was pitching last week. Who asked the question? About
Jason King.
Jason King, that's right. Bringing Bullet Club into WWE, having the various factions spread, or having the faction spread across three brands. I was like, mm-hmm. No, I don't want a unified faction. I want to see them all feud. Yeah. So this is what I want. Undisputed Era versus Balor Club versus the Elite, or whatever they would call an AJ Young Bucks team. Balor Club has to go over. AJ is already hugely over. Young Bucks would be extremely over when they got there. I understand the idea of why you would say Undisputed Era, because them being an NXT...
Why are you... You're saying, Mike, you can't do that.
No,
that's cheating.
It's called undercutting you. They could definitely use the rub because they're an NXT. They're not as established as Balor or AJ. Nonetheless, I'll go OG. Give me Balor Club because they're real. The OGs go over Balor
Club.
I'll
never forget when Adam Cole was inducted into Bullet Club, was brought into Bullet Club. He was the most Bullet Club guy there ever was.
Yeah, man.
Remember when Cody was brought in and then he showed up at Wrestle Kingdom and you could barely tell he was Bullet Club?
He had the smallest Bullet Club logos on his boots.
You couldn't even tell. But when Adam Cole was, somehow he immediately had his Adam Cole
Bullet Club
shirt. Well, he had
like a leather blazer with a huge Bullet Club logo on
it. It was all over his trunks and everything and his boots and everything. Look, Adam Cole is definitely real, baby. You're right. Or no, what you were saying about me is right. Undisputed Era, they would need the rub. They're the young guys. They're the guys coming up. Look at Bobby Fish.
Bobby Fish isn't that young, though.
No, Bobby Fish, he's a man from the 1900s.
He's like almost our age.
He's 93 years old. Doesn't look a day over 56. Yeah, he's pretty old. But they're new. They're new. Gallows and Anderson, they've been around forever. And nobody really believes that they're anything really threatening anymore.
Well, if they get rid of the whole nerd thing, then yeah, they would be.
Finn Balor likes to dress up like a demon. It was cheesy. The Young Bucks would probably be the Young Bucks, actually. But the Young Bucks and AJ would have to go over, really. Because of the Young Bucks. They probably have it in their contract. Are you kidding me? They'd be making so much money.
Oh, yeah.
WWE would just throw money at them.
Well, I don't know.
Sorry about that lawsuit. Or the cease and desist.
Cease and desist.
Yeah.
But they'd have to close down their pro wrestling tee shop. That's huge money for them.
Contractually, they would just keep it open.
Oh, okay.
They would say Vince will come to your company.
I don't think that WWE would let them do that because that's t-shirt money that WWE would want to make.
Parts, yeah, that's a good point.
So they wouldn't let them do that.
They'd say, we'll do a 50-50 split. Fine, you drive a hard bargain, Nick or Matt, whichever one I'm talking to now.
Can you do the pose for me?
Exactly. I don't know what the question is. Yeah, probably Balor Club. I love Finn Balor. He's the best. Freaking Burgundy Balor. Next up. Oh, we've got two
text questions.
We always call these text questions. We've got two text-based adventures here. The first one is from Aaron Smith, and he said this. I was wondering if you would debate who you guys think. I'm just giving him this voice. I don't really, this is how it is. I was wondering if you would debate who you guys think are the most underrated tag team outside of WWE. Oh, outside of WWE?
Oh, you better change your answer real quick.
I gotta change my answer then.
I'll continue. It doesn't have to be from a specific era, but just in general. Personally, I would say the Motor City Machine Guns. As both Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley provide great in-ring work as well as comedic bits when necessary. He included a video of something they did in TNA.
I have my answer.
Thank you both for the great content you produced. Thank you, Aaron Smith. I guess I have to go first.
No, I'll go first. I have it. There is this tag team in TNA that nobody's heard of since. They were called Generation Me.
Oh, God.
And it was these two
younger guys. It's the Young Bucks.
It was two younger guys.
What were their names?
You know, you need to learn better comedic timing. You need to let me get through this a little bit before then you just say.
What were their names?
I think one guy's name was Mick, and the other guy's name was
It was Jeremy. Was
Jason.
One of, was one of them.
And they're really fast and cool.
It's the Young Bucks.
And they... And then they're Young Bucks.
They're the Young Bucks now. Yeah.
But they're Generation Me.
But they're the Young Bucks before that.
Right. But they're in TNA. They're outside of WWE. Generation Me. That tag team is vastly underrated. You know why they're underrated? Actually, if you think about it, mine is the best answer because they are the most underrated tag team ever because TNA never kept them. And look at them now.
TNA didn't know how to use anybody.
They no, not true.
They had CM Punk under the employ, potentially. He left.
He did some good stuff there. AJ Styles was there.
Yeah, I know. There's
Samoa Joe was there.
There's a handful of people that rose.
The Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels, was there.
Yes, I know all these.
You know, he wears like a uniform.
Yeah,
now.
I don't get it.
It just doesn't look. It looks.
I don't get that. I don't know why he does that. Here's the answer.
Why is nobody ever said? He's like, hey, look, Kazarian, I'm the ring general. Looks like a Nazi uniform. No, man. Nobody's going to think that. Just you. As though, I honestly don't know because I came to that a little bit late when I started noticing that. And I don't know if anybody ever noticed
I don't know
that
either.
His outfit looks like a Nazi outfit. It does. Anyways, what were you going to say?
South Pacific Power Trip.
They're perfectly rated. I love them. I rate them great.
How do you know if they're still a tag team? I think they had a match in progress, TK Cooper and Travis Banks. Both really good wrestlers. I've actually only really seen them wrestle once, but it was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was great.
At the Progress show, WrestleMania weekend this last year, they took on Shane Strickland, Sami Callihan. Fantastic match. Their chemistry is great. Mm-hmm. Character work is great. Across the board, great. I just don't see their names out there a whole lot as far as top tag teams working today.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't even know if they're still a tag team. But I hope they get back together because they're phenomenal.
Yeah.
They're really good together.
Yeah, no, they're awesome. That was a fantastic match. They fought Shane Strickland and Sami Callihan.
Yeah.
God damn, that was a crazy match.
Yeah, it was.
They were jumping over the rail and everything. Mm-hmm. Very dangerous. I'm ring general. No, it's not good.
It's not good.
We've got another question here.
Another text one from Tapped House TV. His question is, when we view wrestlers in their prime, and he brings up names like AJ, Cedric Alexander, Kenny Omega, the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, and Tyler Black, who is now Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not the time we spend watching them now or the time we put in making or the time they put in making their names was better in Ring of Honor and other places was better. So I think what he's asking here is, in terms of the work, what do we appreciate more? Say Daniel Bryan and is at the peak Yes Movement or his work mid-aughts in Ring of Honor?
Or his work now as general manager of SmackDown. Oh, man, I don't know. I haven't seen enough. I'll be honest. I'll be completely honest. With so many of these names, I have not seen enough of their previous work. I've seen AJ in a handful of New Japan matches, and they're honestly some of the best matches I've ever seen. I rate them up there. It'll be really interesting to see the match he puts on with Shinsuke and then be able to compare and contrast
that. Yeah, that's the most obvious, easiest comparison to be able to make.
Yeah.
Of all of these, I can probably speak the most to AJ because, I haven't really seen a ton of AJ's TNA stuff, but I've seen half a dozen or so New Japan matches. And what I've noticed, it's not a huge difference, but there's a difference in his work. Granted, in New Japan, he was a heel, and it's rare you see a heel that works a really exciting, fast-paced style because that gets the crowd excited. That's not necessarily what the heel's supposed to do. They're supposed to get heat. They're supposed to get booed. Mm-hmm. And we're doing all sorts of exciting stuff. You're going to get cheers because it's impressive. But there was even a difference between how AJ worked upon his arrival at WWE when he was a heel after he turned heel on John Cena and kind of aligned with the club. Even that work was different than what we saw in New Japan as a heel. When he came to WWE, he's doing the stuff with Chris Jericho, fast pace. His program with Roman Reigns, the two pay-per-view matches they had were just bang, 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 bang. The pace was fantastic. And he kind of continued that pace regardless if he was working heel or face.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if I don't think it's necessarily an evolution of his style of wrestling. Mm-hmm. I think it's just wrestling based on the character more so than anything. Because his match against Nakamura, it's a pretty long match, and it's pretty, you know, it's a deliberate pace.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Doesn't mean it's not exciting. Yeah. There's not drama to it, but it's not like a super fast-paced match. Watch Nakamura versus Kota Ibushi the year prior Wrestle Kingdom. It's 10 minutes shorter, and that never lets up.
Yeah.
It's just bang, 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 bang. And it's not because, and it's not necessarily because if you're running the whole time, it's because there's not a whole lot of break. There's no rest. I don't say rest holds, submission holds, nothing or very little. It's just bang, 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 bang. Moves, 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 violence, 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 kick to the heads, kick to the heads, kick to the heads. But that's the one thing I've noticed about AJ from his work in New Japan to his work in WWE is just the pace is quicker.
Some of the stuff I've seen from Daniel Bryan in his indie days, with Tyler Black also, I've seen a handful of those. I've noticed this with with wrestlers on the indie circuit, whenever you see their older stuff compared to WWE stuff especially, but even you could say the New Japan stuff, on the indie circuits, you could always tell the really hungry wrestlers mm-hmm. who are going to make it
mm-hmm.
because like Tyler Black would wrestle like hungry. You know what I mean? Like
yeah, yeah.
with a extra step of urgency mm-hmm. that a lot of others didn't have.
I mean, he did a moonsault off a fan at one show.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Daniel Bryan, same thing. Mm-hmm. When you see, I just get these images in my head of him that I've seen from various like PWG shows of just this like frenetic energy. And it's not just, oh, he's wrestling fast. It's there's an excitement. There's a hunger. There's an energy about him that's anxious to prove something mm-hmm. that's kind of intangible.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, which one would you rather see? I don't know. I like to see if those guys can bring that energy to the WWE or
working
or
that number
Japan.
Of days, yeah, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's one thing I wish Seth Rollins would bring back. Hmm. Bring back the moshing.
Oh, I know. Me too.
That was great.
He had it in NXT for a short time.
Yep.
I know.
Great. And you see those videos or I guess they're GIFs on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Some indie show where he's moshing and then some fans get to start moshing with him and stuff. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. It's great. Yeah. Anyways, what a spirited episode of Matt Chat today.
Hey, sorry I raised my voice.
I don't apologize.
I was trying to make for an entertaining show.
Why are you apologizing? Don't be all weird and
I'm not being weird.
I'm sorry. Don't apologize to me.
All right.
It's Matt. It's a debate show. You're supposed to yell at each other.
Kick rocks then.
There you go. What was the other one? Beat feet.
Beat feet. Yeah.
Beat feet. No, what's Patrick Sparks had it.
Oh yeah. What
Something
was
sand.
Pound sand.
Pound sand. That's awkward.
Pound sand. Sometimes when you get in these debate
pound
shows.
Pound ground.
No, it's pound sand.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like I gotta take things to the extreme.
You gotta get real.
Or just speculate endlessly and spew gibberish and try to make a point.
No, it's great. You don't have to apologize ever. This is Matt Chat. We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.